Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are here live, and I'm trying to get my Instagram show ready as well. Let me tell you how to get a hold of me, 877-385-8882. Once again, 877-385-8882. Anyway, you know, something came up. I wanted to talk to you guys about it. There are two things. There was an article, and I posted this already, so we're going to share it with you. Someone sent it to me, and it was an article basically stating that 42% of cats are allergic to fish. How is that possible? Right? 42% allergic to fish? No way. So I asked them to send me the article. So they sent me the article, and I'm reading this article, and it was so interesting. First of all, food allergy is something in cats as well. We know about it in dogs, but there's something called miliary dermatitis, which is you get these lesions, all right, around the mostly neck, back, thighs, the linear granuloma, eosinophilic granuloma complex. It's all allergic, and it may be, in fact, related to food allergy. I mean, other allergens as well. And then, of course, there's basic cat dermatology, dermatologic problems, itching, scabs, et cetera. So what I found interesting is I read the article. And so the funny part is that what's interesting is that, which is more typical of dogs, that there are only 11 to 14% of cats, period, have food allergies. Ah, now that makes sense. Of those 11 to 14%, then the truth is that's where the number came in at 42%. Well, let's take a high number. Let's take 42% of 14 is 5.88. So what is that telling you? That if you look at the grand picture of cats that have allergies to fish, it's only 6%. It's 42% of the 14%. Anyway, that was interesting to hear. We have a listener on chat, so let's hear what we got. All right, chat, hold on. Wondering what your thoughts of BioVect Holistic Remedy for heartworm prevention. A few of my friends have been using it for a while. Altis, a negative. I had my Tillion for 3 years, no problem. So it's a good question. Again, I don't do holistic. I'm not against holistic at all. In fact, one of my very good friends and colleagues is a holistic doc who does both. And so I can't answer your question to say whether it's good or bad. I can tell you one thing I've learned over the years about holistic remedies. They're not dangerous. So if you have something, and I also... something years ago, I've always said, I don't argue with success. So if in fact you're using something that is working, continuing to be heartworm negative, and you're okay with it, and you can afford it, et cetera, then by all means, keep using it. I'm not the one to say it's not going to work because I don't know enough about it. But I will tell you that, you know, again, I don't argue with success. You've been using something, it's great. Now, when it talks about it's gotten so expensive, plus the ingredients are not holistic, I appreciate your opinion. If the ingredients aren't holistic, and now you're going back to a regular heartworm prevention, then I know those are safe. I know those are effective. So that I can say that's fine. Put it this way. Let's go backwards, even more so. For years and years and years, we never really had mosquito problems here in Southern California. So I never really always recommended it as an option because we didn't need it. So I would do flea and tick. Now, years and years ago, I had, interestingly, they said it was the first case of heartworm disease in a native California dog. And it lived, interestingly, right near a very large cemetery. I know it sounds pretty gross, and I'm not worried about the dead arising. However, I will tell you that the lawns of these cemeteries are so vastly green and lush, and they're watering them all the time, et cetera. When the Heartworm Prevention Society wanted to visit the location, which they did, they realized where it was. They said, oh, that makes sense. What makes sense? That there's going to be a lot of heartworm mosquitoes. Why? Because they love moisture. They love heat. So they went and they lifted up some headstones. Thousands of mosquito larvae. I mean, that's crazy. So that's really kind of, you know, what happened, what was going on. Just so many mosquito larvae. They predicted then that in the next 20 years, which is now, we are going to see heartworm disease in Southern California. So I see mosquitoes around my home, and a lot of my clients have. So we have started about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, recommending heartworm prevention as a routine. And I'm, you know, good old-fashioned Interceptor or HeartGuard, or now three of the isoxazoline anti-flea and tick medications, the Credelio, NexGard and Simparica have options that also prevent heartworm. That way, only giving one chewable pill once a month. That's it, makes it so easy. I have yet to see a bad reaction. So isoxazolines can have bad reactions. So if you are worried about that, and it's, by the way, very rare, but if you are worried about that, then think about staying with HeartGuard or Interceptor. They're both very effective. I don't have that same feeling about Holistic because I'm not, but I will tell you that if you have that sensitivity, Cheryl, then stick with what you have if it's working. But also, I wouldn't be so worried about adding one of the more Western medicine heartworm preventives, because the medication is something that's commonly used in many other products. So I have not seen a problem. I hope that answers your question, and thanks for asking. So back to the fish thing. So yes, food allergy is an issue in cats, but only a very small percent of cats have food allergy. And yes, of the small percentage, there were 42% have fish allergies. However, this article did not specify the fish. And just like in animals and dogs that we know, there are so many different antigens. You look at, let's say, the bovidae, the bovines, and you have buffalo, and you have bison, and you have cows, et cetera. You have beef. So are they the same antigen? No. You can have beef allergy coming from cows, like Angus, whatever, and not allergic to bison or buffalo. They're all cousins. So again, to say fish as a broad category without identifying which fish, I don't know if they've gone so far as to identify which fish. In dogs, this is better known because it's a what we call protein, novel protein diets, and elimination diets is so commonplace. So therefore, we need to know. So that's why I am not that concerned when you hear about these allergies, these fish allergies, whatever, because it's a small percent, and B, when you think about any particular fish protein antigen, because usually when there's allergies, that's what the issue is. The issue is the antigen. The antigen is usually the protein. So we're looking for what we call limited protein. And that's why it's so important when you're changing food from one, don't say, oh my God, it has fish in it. No, you want to find out which fish. So you can start with home-cooked meals and trying different fish one at a time. Try salmon, try tilapia, try cod, try carp, try shrimp, whatever it is that you want to feed your animal, and see, is it improving? One very difficult thing to do, however, is when it comes to this issue, when it comes to the elimination, you have to be really strict. That means during this course of the 6 to 8 weeks that you're going to eliminate whatever protein you fear is the culprit, there can be nothing else. In fact, we look for, that's what we call single antigen diets. We want a diet that has one source of protein and either one grain or one vegetable. Cats is less important. Cats are obligate carnivores. They still like other things. And dogs, we want to stay away from the more common ones. Because of, it's no wonder that there are some cats that have fish allergies. Why? Because fish allergies are developed over time. For example, you take a person who is allergic to bees. That first bee sting probably didn't affect them at all, other than the ouch factor. But as far as a reaction, it takes a while to develop that reaction to the point where either second or third or fourth or fifth bee sting, you can get anaphylactic reaction. So the first exposure is not a big deal. But over time, the more and more animals, the more and more cats that are eating a fish diet, we're going to, of course, identify more and more. And that's why the dogs, the most common allergens in proteins are beef and chicken. Well, guess what? Most dog food for millennia have had beef and chicken. So no wonder why we're seeing more and more allergies to those things. But if you fed a bison or alligator or kangaroo, right? Or fish, for example, because dog foods don't usually have those ingredients, chances are there's not going to be an allergic reaction. So it's something that we have to sort of, over time, develop that knowledge and the experience to know, is this protein going to be a problem or not? So I hope that answers that question. Okay, here's another thing I wanted to talk about. I have teased you for the last couple of weeks about 4th of July. And we know it's not far behind. We're about 5 weeks away now. So I get so many calls, and I'm sure many of you have had experience with your pets that totally freak out on 4th of July. Other than drugs, and perfect, having this question about holistic, I know a lot of you don't like drugs. I'm okay with that. And there are some more mild. I'm a big fan of CBD. I'm a big fan of even Benadryl, but that's not, it's a drug, but it's not really a downer, but it does calm them down a little bit. And You know, I have my chill, my medication. It's not even medication. I have a supplement called Chill. You can get it online. It's on my line, Dr. Jeff Werber. And it is valerian, passion flower, chamomile, melatonin, tryptophan. So all these things that are known to have a natural calming effect on pets. But if you need to go to drugs, a lot of you don't like the idea. So here's a solution that is more permanent. I'm hoping you can accomplish it in 5 weeks. You should be able to. And here's what we do. Right now, for some reason, these loud noises, whether it's thunder, lightning, whether it's fireworks, have a really negative effect on our pets. They freak out. Why? Why the loud noise? There's obviously some sort of association that they've had over time with these loud noises. And it's a negative association. Ah, so what can we do? The whole goal of treatment, permanent treatment, is to change that reaction, change that relationship between loud noise and a fearful response. How do we do it? So what I recommend is you want to, now it's so great having internet. I mean, internet is great for some things, not so great for other things. Sometimes Dr. Google can scare the, you know, what's out of you. Everything is an emergency. Everything is, oh my gosh, now your dog's going to die. No. So my recommendation is what you can do is start with downloading or going onto a site where it's a sound effects. You can download almost any sound effect you can think of. Construction workers, you know, thunder, lightning, fireworks, Masonic bombs, planes taking off. I mean, whatever it is, you can download those sounds. And what you do is you're going to start using those sounds to your advantage. And as we have to break for halfway through the show, we're going to take a quick break. And that way you're going to stay online because you want to hear the solution to how to train your dog to not be afraid of loud sounds. And take it away, Mark. We're back after these short messages.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand, only from Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we are back here live on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet with Dr. Jeff. And so, by the way, if you want any other questions, like Cheryl did, 877-385-8882. Once again, 877-385-8882. Or just go ahead and you can basically find me right here on, you're here live, so why not? So back to the 4th of July. So what you do is this. We want to make that same sound something that is positive. How do we do that? First of all, what do dogs respond mostly to? Positive reinforcement, positive reward. They love positive reward. So here's what you do. You're going to be in a room with the dog and you're going to play this sound that you've downloaded so low that you probably can't even hear it. Okay. But they can. And when it's playing, you call your dog over and say, oh, look at this. And go, oh, good boy, good girl. And give a little treat, pat them really great. And then that's it. That's lesson number one. Next day or 2 days later, do it again. By the third day, now you've increased the sound just a little. And you're going to go every day or every other day for the next 2-3 weeks. And you're going to increase the sound a little bit. And every time, the dog is going to become running to you for its treat. Because that sound now equates to a reward. And that's exactly, you know, how it works. So slowly but surely, you're taking that sound, which in a, before was a negative behavior. It elicited fear. It elicited something to run away and hide. And then also, just so you know, many of us inadvertently reward our dogs for the reaction. Why? Because what we do is this. What happens when your dog is fearful and responds negatively to loud sounds, right? What do? Actually, we're parents. We love them. Oh, you poor baby, come here. You sit with mom. You sit with daddy, okay? So what happens is, what are you doing? They're showing fearful behavior and you're calling them over and rewarding them for it. That's a thing. It's got to be the opposite. You're going to reward them for the behavior, the non-reaction, where they come to you when they hear it and they know they're going to get a reward and they're no longer afraid. They're not going to run to the furniture. They're not going to shiver and shake. If anything, they're going to come to you with their tail wagging. Oh my God, I hear that loud sound. I'm getting my treat. So it's something that is a slow, methodical process. Be patient. Don't try to do it all in one day. It takes 2-3 weeks to do it because you're increasing the sound a little bit each period, each time you do it. But the ultimate goal is to teach them to not only be afraid of the sound, but to actually desire, to want to hear it, because the association is going to be a positive association. And it's so interesting because that kind of behavior, it's a reconditioning. You're desensitizing them to that sound, and you're actually counter-conditioning them to not be fearful, but to actually like it. And there's so much of this is really good. And also, through what was called operant conditioning, every time you give a dog a treat, you should accompany it with what? Pats on the head, you do a good boy, kiss, kiss, hug, hug, right? Pretty soon, that behavior is going to, in essence, replace the actual treat. They're going to get that same thrill, that same rush, that same endorphin release, that feel good just by getting, oh, you're a good boy, you know, that is going to suffice. Not to say you shouldn't still give a treat, but you don't have to give it every time. And again, another training tactic, that when you give a treat every single time, then when they get full, they don't care. I don't want the treat. I'm stuffed. I can only have so many treats. But if you only do it, you keep them guessing. It might be next time. It might be 3 more times afterwards. It might be 5. Back to 1. They never know when it's going to stop. So they keep coming. And they've shown experiments with mice and hitting a tab. Many experiments show that animals are more responsive for longer when they don't know, they can't predict when, if it's coming. If it never comes, they give up. They stop. If it comes all the time, they stop when they're full. But if it's intermittent and it's unpredictable, they're going to keep coming. So, that's another thing that we've learned over the years. So anyway, what else? I like to report on some of my really, really cool cases. We had a very large mass on a much older dog's arm that the fear was by feeling, by palpating, it was in the elbow to the distal humerus area. And it was really, really aggressive. And it was very well, deeply attached. And we thought, God, it's going to be a tough one to get because it's so high up, it's going up, and it's sort of like attached on the top to an area called the brachial plexus on the proximal end of the humerus going into the armpit. It's going to be a really tough dissection. But we figured, all right, our original plan was to amputate. So it's a tough thing to do on an older dog, but they do fine. I mean, the one who feels worst about a 3-legged dog is the owner. Dogs really could care less. They get along just fine. Anyway, feeling it again, we'd say, if we're planning and the owner's planning to okay with amputation, then why not try it first? Let's see if we can resect it first. So we went in, open, slow dissection. It turned out to be a huge, but it was mostly a very firm, what appeared to be fat. I called it lipoma, but not soft and mushy. It was rock hard. But some could be like that, probably because it was in such a compressed area that there was no place for it to continue to expand. So instead, as the fat cells were multiplying and multiplying and multiplying, which is what a tumor cells do, because they couldn't push out, it just started compressing and making the mass more and more and more dense. So it was very thick. So we were able to, with some pretty tricky dissection, is actually remove this tumor. You can imagine the phone call, the owners, when we told them that the good news, we're out of surgery. The better news, we didn't have to amputate. And we were able to remove this mass. It looks like the dog is already 13 years old, big dog. Even if it comes back, if we couldn't get every single last fat cell that might be over multiplying, it's going to take months and months, probably more than a year. But we felt good about it. We think we got it all. Anyway, even if we didn't. So the truth is, this dog, unlikely, a large breed like this is not going to live much past 14 or 15. So chances are we save this dog's leg. And that's what it boils down to. I have to tell you, and I've mentioned this before, that when we get to do something like this, and we actually can not only save a life, but in this case, save a limb. And the effect that it had on the owners was, and the dog, most importantly, obviously, was amazing. So we got so, so lucky that we were able to do this for the dog. And now this dog is, great. So it's perfect. All right, any other questions we have? And also, as I said, as if you weren't here last week, as we're planning your summer vacations and you're planning on taking your pets with you, make sure the key word there was planning. Whether you're taking them or not planning to take them, you need to make alternative plans for the pet. Is it if somebody coming in a pet sitter? Are you taking the dog out to a pet sitter? What is going to be your plan? If you're going to a hotel, is it pet friendly? If it is pet friendly, is there a size limitation of the pet? All too often, I've heard this story where you show up with your 80, 90 pound dog and they have a 35 pound weight limit. So now you're up, you know, West Creek. So these are the things you really have to bring. Are you prepared to bring enough food and meds? Let's say you get delayed. Don't just count the number of days you're going to be away. Add a week just in case. Better to have and not need than need and not have. So just have a picture. Make sure your pet has ID. As you're traveling, if you're traveling by car, then make sure you bring a big jug of your local water. And then at every stop, just continue to top it. So that way you're slowly introducing the different water supplies from the different regions and different areas into your home water. All these little tidbits of information should be very, very helpful. So most importantly, have fun. And again, if you're going into an area, we talked about heartworm disease. If you're going into an area, for example, that has a bigger tick problem or a mosquito problem or a Lyme disease problem that you don't have where you are, make sure you call ahead to your relatives or friends or the hotel, wherever you're staying. Find out from a local veterinarian what injections, what vaccines might you need for where you're traveling to that you may not need at your point of origin. So you got to be prepared to make the differences, make the changes. So that's also pretty important. So anyway, I think that's all we have time for today. I will be here next week, same time, same channel here on Pet Life Radio. And again, during the week, if you need to get a hold of me, you can just drjeff@petliferadio.com. You can also reach me on Instagram, worbs_DVM. And all these things, we can have a fun time. I'm glad you can join me here on Pet Life Radio. And again, we'll see you next week, same time, same channel. And if you have any questions during the week, please reach out to me. And by the way, if it's really important, you don't have to wait till Sunday. I'd be happy. The emails will come to me. I will answer you right away. If you want me to, if it's a chat question, you can also join me here on AirVet. If you haven't downloaded AirVet, you're going to have a live conversation with a veterinarian. So there are so many options and opportunities you have. So keep me posted and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.